As a child, I regularly had my ears flushed out. The doctor would fill a large metal syringe with warm water and gently squirt it into my ear canal while I held a small metal kidney-shaped dish at the side of my head to catch the discoloured wax lumps that obscured my hearing. Now, I say warm water because that's how he described it, but to my sensitive childish skin, it may just as well have been boiling oil. The first time he did this procedure, the doctor told me it would be uncomfortable. He was wrong. It was painful. The ear is not an orifice you ever want anyone to put anything into. Ever. Think of being in rough surf with a fistful of earbuds being simultaneously rammed into your brain. The cause, he said, was my irregularly shaped ear canal, which caught the wax and allowed it to build up instead of flowing onto the pillow as it did from the more regularly formed ear canals of the children in our neighbourhood. My oral disability meant that I could look forward to a lifetime of inner ear washouts, the liquid rattling around inside my skull, surging against my brain, and sometimes trickling down my throat. The upside of these aquatic canaloscopies was emerging from the doctor's surgery with the most glistening, shiny new, clean-as-a-whistle hearing. The auditory world would rush in, and suddenly I could hear everything, and I mean everything, in the most exquisite detail. The orchestra of summer cicadas, deafening to your common or garden variety ear canal, sounded to me as if they were physically inside my head, their legs and noisy thoraxes dangling out of my ear hole. The traffic roared, speech was a shout. The shower was a thunderous waterfall. I could hear the sound of a fly's legs rubbing as it scuttled across the kitchen table. I could hear the neighbour's washing machine in its spin cycle two houses away. I could hear the thwack of the leather ball on the wood of a cricket bat in a front yard two suburbs over. I attribute my early love of audio art to this experience of a world going quieter and quieter and then post-procedure ringing with presence. I did not grow up listening to the radio. My grandmother had a transistor, but it was always tuned to the races, so I had no nostalgic relationship to what she called the wireless. But I first expressed myself as a dramatist in the then old-fashioned medium of radio, not in the more generationally appropriate medium of film. And from radio I learned an early love of superb diction in that most beautiful and lyrical medium for artistry, the actor's voice. I have used this story, this revelation about my warped inner ear, as the starting point of my ruminations about my life as a playwright, to illustrate the necessity of becoming a good listener. It is the foundation of all that I am and all that I still might be. Listening, carefully, attentively, hypersensitively. And also to tell you that being a good listener is not about being silent. I mean, some of it is about being silent, having the self-discipline to shut up and let someone else talk. But good listening is an active process, a cat-and-mouse game where you draw out your subject by convincing them that in some ways you have become an extension of their own brain. So that when you speak, you say something with which they either agree so entirely that it is a surprise to them, or something that articulates in a distilled way everything they have been trying to say. Isn't that kind of conversation just the most inspiring, most world-shaking thing to do? To talk, really talk with someone, and in that hour, in that 40 minutes, be able to externalise all that has previously been residing only in their own consciousness. That is your aim in every interview. You have to listen closely, carefully, because this has to be the most interesting, most revealing, most self-revealing conversation that your interviewee has ever had. You are tuned to the tiniest clues about who they are. You are armed with the most sophisticated insights into how human nature works, and you are listening with your ears, with your spirit, with your mind, with your gut. And when they pause for breath, when they stumble in their monologue, you will make the one salient point that will set them off again into new territory, saying things they didn't know they knew, had not consciously thought before. You will spin a spell over them so they are fully alive in the present moment, not recalling things that they thought before or relating stories they have already digested, but jumping synapses in their brain to new thoughts, new insights, new revelations. And when you type that up and put it on stage, an audience will hear a person on the horns of a dilemma, on the brink of understanding, in the dramatic moment of self-knowledge. And that's what will make it good theatre, transformative storytelling instead of dry, pre-digested factual analysis. So flush out your ears. Concentrate on what people around you say. You'll realise that people are more elliptical, incorrect, inaccurate and obfuscating than you knew. We are seduced by faces and tones. If someone looks friendly and speaks gently, we think they are being honest with us. You need to ignore the persuasions of a person's external appearance or voice. If you listen to what they generalise about, it will tell you their value system. Listen to who they bitch about and you will know their fears. Agatha Christie is perhaps the last person you might expect me to invoke as a literary role model, a worthy writing instructor. All those uber-polite, abominably genteel BBC crime shows, all that appalling expositional dialogue and creaky plotting. And yet Agatha Christie, while not esteemed as such, is one of the world's most successful writers for theatre. The adaptation of her play, The Mousetrap, in continuous performance since 1952, is the longest-running work of theatre in London's West End. Personally, I don't much like her writing or the excruciating television adaptations of it. I don't wish to be Anglo-centric or genre-validating either, or to suggest that commercial success is the ultimate arbiter in valorising her. But I do want to choose an unlikely, unnoticed female playwright who wrote more than 20 plays and boil down Christie's main premise, her overarching message, which is pay attention. Observe the signs. Watch carefully. Listen carefully. Look at things in new ways. Believe what you see and hear yourself, not what other people tell you. Don't judge by facades. See through people and their smokescreen defences. Pay attention.